Insight on Business, the News Hour, is made possible through the support of the HR professionals at Oasis, a paychecks company. Learn how to grow your small business or nonprofit by outsourcing your HR and payroll functions. OasisAHR.com.
Welcome back to Insight on Business, the News Hour. Grateful that you have clicked through. It's wonderful to be back on the ground here in the great state of Iowa. And with me is Kathy Obradovich. And Kathy is the editor-in-chief of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. This is a new news gathering and reporting organization that's available here in Iowa and on the web. And we're going to talk about who they are, what they do, what the mission is, some of their funding opportunities as well. And this should be interesting for those of you who like public policy. What goes on under the Golden Dome should be of great interest to you. Kathy, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Michael. It's always great to talk to you.
You know, we have known each other in different roles in the media here in the greater Des Moines metro, anyway. You with the Des Moines Register for years and years and years.
Yeah, 16 years.
How was that separation? Was that tough?
It was tough. The timing was tough. I was happy at the Register, but I was ready for a new adventure, and this was an opportunity to try to help my industry work through its, you know, business model issues. I've over 30 years in the business, I've seen the newspaper industry continue to decline. This is an experiment that I believe in to give people more opportunities to have quality journalism from experienced journalism, especially in the State House, but also other aspects of Iowa public policy. And I really thought that I was just ready for a new challenge.
And the names that are associated with Iowa Capital Dispatch should be very recognizable to Iowans from river to river and border to border.
Exactly.
They are.
We kind of got the band back together.
Yeah,
Clark Kaufman, who was very well known as an investigative reporter, is very well known.
The top of the line investigative reporter.
Yeah, he was a Pulitzer Prize finalist, and he often a former public information person just told me the other day that he heard Clark's name and he still got that kind of got an uh-oh feeling. So I brought Clark back into journalism. He was actually working at the state ombudsman's office and continuing to investigate state government, but a lot of what the work he was doing, he couldn't publish, and so he was ready to come back into journalism. Perry Beeman, very well known as a environmental reporter and also in the business community. We brought him over from the Business Record, where he was managing editor. And then Lynn Ta, a very up-and-coming young journalist. She'd been at the Register now 5 or 6 years, most recently covering retail business, but she was also covering criminal justice and courts and crime news, et cetera. And she was the Iowa Newspaper Association's best young journalist last year. So we were very excited to bring her aboard as well.
So there are seasoned as well as some new reporters that are working with the Iowa Capital Dispatch. What is the genesis of this organization? Where do you come from?
Yeah, so we are part of a national organization, a national not-for-profit called States Newsroom. So that's States, plural, Newsroom. And it grew out of a public policy kind of think tank slash news organization called the North Carolina Policy Project. The founders of that group decided to try to expand around the country. The first thing they did was kind of endow some other existing operations in existing states, like the Colorado Independent is one that was pretty well known. And then they, for the last year and a half or so, have been opening new newsrooms around the country. Iowa is the 14th of the newsrooms to open. There is actually already a 15th in Minnesota that opened last week, I think, and there will be more in 2020.
Wow. And the overarching theme, what is it that the dispatch is after? What are you reporting on for the most part?
Yeah, I mean, I think the mission and the reason for this is that newspapers around the country have lost over half their staff since the early 2000s. There have been 1,800 newspapers closed in that period of time. And one of the big hits to that has been State House coverage around the country. There just aren't as many reporters looking out, being watchdogs over state government. And so that really was the kind of the brief. Now, there is a D.C. bureau with State's Newsroom. One of the areas that I think doesn't get enough coverage in Iowa is our congressional delegation and what they are doing in Washington. Everybody covers them when they come to town for a town hall meeting or whatever. But they don't get what they're actually doing in Washington doesn't get covered. So I wanted to see that as an area that we could fill. You know, it's kind of like the old baseball analogy. We want to hit them where they ain't. You know,
right.
We want to focus on stories that just aren't getting covered anymore.
And those are the kinds of stories, I think, that pique people's interest because they are rare and unfound. You just can't find these stories in many places. And to think that there's nothing going on would be a travesty for the public information side.
Yeah, there have been studies, Michael, that say that taxpayers, if they don't have a strong community newspaper in their town, actually end up paying more for things like community bond issues because the bond issuers look at that town and they, if there's not a strong journalism presence, they decide that the public officials are either probably inefficient or corrupt. And so they just charge these towns more for their bond issues.
Kathy Obradovich, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest. She is the editor-in-chief of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. So when you guys launched, how 3 weeks ago? I don't know.
It's just we're in our third week.
Yeah, right. Hello? Busy? Are you busy?
Yeah, it's been busy. Yeah. This has been, our first week was the week before the legislative session. We were really still kind of learning the ropes as the Iowa legislature was coming into session. So it's been a lot of really long days. And of course, you know, we're now just a couple of weeks before the Iowa caucuses, so we have plenty to do.
Yeah, not only plenty to do, but plenty to report on.
Yes, yeah, no lack of news.
Yeah, no, there isn't. And when you take a look at what's going on under the Golden Dome in the state capitol, there are some real divergent views going on today that I don't think many individuals in the public realize. I mean, there are great calls, you know, saying, okay, we need to increase the sales tax, we need to pay for water and land, and at the same time, there are questions of how we're going to fund everything that we have to fund, even though that we do have, in the state of Iowa, a budget surplus.
The Governor Kim Reynolds came forth with her condition of the state message and a very, very ambitious agenda. Normally, you would see a governor with maybe one or two major pieces of policy. She has half a dozen or more major initiatives that she is looking to either create in terms of funding for the first time the Iowa Water and Land Legacy and putting that money into water quality. Or funding for the first time the mental health system in Iowa through mostly state dollars, or expanding some of her existing initiatives like Future Ready Iowa, which is aimed at workforce development. So she has a lot going on. You've got an Iowa House that is all Republican, and so the House and Senate are both controlled
Correct.
By Republicans. So you would think, her agenda would just slide through. But actually, Republicans do not agree among themselves about some of the details of these initiatives. So it's going to be a very, very heavy lift this session.
Yeah, and some of the things, and again, so back on Governor Kim Reynolds and her agenda, were you surprised at all? You sound as though you were, that
surprised.
She had such a broad agenda.
I was surprised at the how much she is really putting out there as priorities to try to do. I mean, if you mention it in your condition of the state message, typically people
sure.
will, first of all, they hold you accountable for whether you can get that done. And like I said, there's definitely not unanimity among Republicans about how best to go about these initiatives. Like, if you raise the sales tax, which, this fund was approved by Iowans 10 years ago, right. A decade ago, there has never been, in order to pay for it, there has to be a sales tax increase. The way it works is it funnels a fraction of that penny sales tax increase into these outdoor recreation and conservation and water quality programs. But you, it's never been funded before because Republicans have not wanted to raise the sales tax.
Three-letter word, tax.
Yes, yes. So the way she structured her proposal is to offset even more. So they can call it a tax cut because they want to cut income and other taxes even more than the sales tax increase would generate in revenue. By even more, I mean it's a pretty slim margin in the governor's plan, about $7.5 million, which is really less than 1% of the whole state general fund. So it's pretty much a break even proposition in her plan. Republicans in the legislatures are probably going to try to increase that gap a little bit more.
But at least it's one of those, from a political standpoint, a win-win. You can say, okay, look, I'm giving you back this, I'm getting this. And then when we turn the page just a little bit, there was much consternation among individuals concerned with mental health in the state. They passed the young adult mental health program last year, but no funding for it.
Right. So the rub there, though, is that she wants to replace a lot of the property tax dollars that are going into mental health through the county regional systems. And, you know, that causes heartburn among local county mental health providers and advocates, because if the state giveth, the state can certainly taketh away. Mm-hmm. And if you, use a state statute to reduce those property tax levies down, and then the state decides, you know what, you know, we could probably be spending this money on something else. And it's really hard to get those property tax levies back up. So they're worried about, you know, what they really need is a sustainable source of funding. The ones I've talked to at least aren't convinced yet that the governor's plan equals sustainable.
And we turn the page to yet another hot topic that's out there, and that is criminal justice reform and workforce development and how those things coexist in a state with such a low unemployment, 2.6% or something like that, I believe it is. And then we have individuals who would like to go to work and companies that would like to have them in, but then we have this ban the box feature, and, you know, the state is going against our friends in Waterloo because the Waterloo City Council goes ahead and says, oh, yeah, we're going to do this. And then, you know, the legislature says, no.
Yeah. So, and ban the box is not part of the governor's proposal at this stage. What she is advancing is a lot of proposals out of a committee that was chaired by the lieutenant governor. And it has a lot to do with, first of all, doing more job training while someone is in prison, easing some of the barriers, not all of them, but some of the barriers for somebody who's returning to society. One of the big ones, I think, is licensure reform. So not only easing some of those barriers and inconsistencies for, you know, people who want to, you know, open a barbershop, you know, and they've got a felony record on their conviction. A lot of that, I think, will do a lot of good. But Iowa is not going to, you know, close the prisons, first of all. And second of all, you know, a lot of what is happening as far as prison overcrowding and is on the sentencing side. So I think my question is, you know, it's great and it's important to ease people's transition out of prison, but what are we doing about the nonviolent offenders that are going and people with mental illness who are going into prison?
And to dovetail on that, then we come back to the opportunity for individuals to reclaim their voting rights here in the state of Iowa, which is an interesting conversation to have because the governor has supported a constitutional amendment. And interestingly enough, I thought ACLU, and I had a conversation with them not very long ago, they support that rather than having the governor proclaim this in a non-legislative way.
Well, a constitutional amendment is a relatively permanent solution. As we have already seen in Iowa, an executive order from the governor is definitely not permanent. And so we had Governor Tom Vilsack set an executive order to make voter restoration automatic. When people, felons, former felons got out of prison, it was automatic. Well, Governor Branstad came back into office, and that was one of the first executive orders that he signed, was to say, no, no, you were going back to the old way where you have to apply to the governor's office and go through a fairly arduous process and maybe even have to hire a lawyer to make sure that you don't do anything wrong and end up, you know, back in prison because you're just trying to vote. So Kim Reynolds has tried to streamline that process. I'll give her credit. But I think she's right that it's going to take a constitutional amendment to fix this. However, the legislature is taking its sweet time, and some of her Republican colleagues are not excited about this, or they want to sort of load on a bunch of conditions. And so we'll see whether this gets resolved in time for people who want to vote in the 2020 elections.
You know, one of the things I looked at when I was reviewing this with the ACLU was, why not go ahead and do an executive order and at the same time move this through the constitutional process?
Well, politically, if the governor does an executive order, lawmakers will look at that and say, well, this is resolved. We don't have to do anything. And, you know, we don't have to stick our necks out. She wants the legislature to have to engage in this as well. And I don't blame her for that. But it does mean a sacrifice in terms of time.
It's a tough balancing act,
yes,
in other words. Let's talk about health care. State Auditor Rob Sand last week, I think it was, took a look at some numbers, and he says, you know, I'm not sure I can make heads or tails out of all of this with regard to Medicaid.
Yeah, I think he's confirming what my colleagues at the Des Moines Register had already concluded, which was that the data available about, you know, how taxpayers' money is being spent on Medicaid is not sufficient. And that the MCOs, the managed care organizations, are not being very forthcoming with details in to help people really figure out whether they're getting what they're paying for, let alone whether they're getting value for their money, but whether the state is literally getting what it's paying for in terms of money spent on care, managed care through privatized Medicaid. And before the session, legislative leaders indicated that they were interested in possibly some legislation that would help the governor's office and, you know, ensure that healthcare providers are being paid by these MCOs. They have not really shown much interest in delving into all of the dollars and cents involved in this. Democrats, of course, have been screaming for more oversight into this, and most of that is falling on deaf ears at this point.
Kathy Obradovich, ladies and gentlemen, editor-in-chief of the Iowa Capital Dispatch, is my guest. Kathy, let's talk about some things that may be on the horizon that we see. Last year, this is interesting because my bride and I, we are lovers of critters, and we have now, I probably should have a kennel license, but we have 5 rescue dogs in our place. Last year, it was a bipartisan deal that was that came out of the House, and it was about animal torture in the state of Iowa, and it was never brought up for a vote in the Iowa Senate. Do you see that coming forward this year?
You know, I can't tell you for sure. I know that there are groups that are very interested in legislation like that. The difficulty historically is that while a lot of what is being proposed can be kind of aimed at pets, farmers get really twitchy that, you know, somehow the way that they do livestock production is somehow going to be affected by it. And so there's been a lot of reluctance. And if you look at the, you know, animal cruelty laws in Iowa, it really does reflect the, I think, influence of agriculture.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and one of the things that bipartisan bill that came out of the House clearly defined, cats and dogs. And, you know, but still, some of our friends became very nervous on that.
Yeah, well, you know, they think, okay, you put it in the code with a clear cats and dogs, but it it would be pretty easy then for a future legislature to just, you know, take that line out with a little amendment
Those two words are called slippery slope, aren't they?
Yes,
heard that many
camel's
times.
Camel's nose under the tent and all that, yeah.
Kathy Bradovich, ladies and gentlemen, with the Iowa Capital Dispatch. All right, as you look forward with this, and I have to ask you, you know, as we see your colleagues in print newspapers all across the country, and I know many of them and have had the opportunity to work with many of them and fine individuals all across the board, when we come to financing something like Capital Dispatch nationwide, how are you doing that? What's the business model?
Yeah. So first of all, we're completely not for profit. So we're really operating on donations. There at the national level, there are foundations and large donors who are financing a lot of it. But at the local level, we're also accepting reader donations and encouraging people. Again, news isn't free. We have to encourage people to pay for their news. And I would add, I encourage people to pay for subscriptions to their local newspapers.
Absolutely.
As well, because we need more journalists, not to replace traditional community newspapers with online operations. I believe in what we're doing, and I think we can really add to people's understanding of what's going on in their government. But I don't want to do that at the expense of our local community newspapers, because they're very important.
Which is why Iowa Capital Dispatch, you allow your reporting to be utilized by other outlets.
Yeah, exactly. And we've had some Iowa newspapers, and in fact, a not Iowa newspaper that circulates in Iowa, the Omaha World Herald, have picked up some of our content already. So we're very encouraged by that. We want to be a resource for them as well as for people who access us directly online.
And final question for you, Kathy. As we go forward with this, you know, we are always accused of taking one side or the other, and we are in our silos, and we only listen or we only appreciate news that reflects our own political beliefs. How are you dealing with that?
We get a lot of questions about that. We got a lot of questions before our launch. First of all, I would encourage people not to be so afraid to consume news that they think, you know, might reflect some viewpoint other than their own. You know, the terror people have that they might accidentally be exposed to an idea that they might not immediately agree with is tragic, I think. But we are a nonpartisan operation, and you know, people will judge us through their own political lens, and you know, frankly, I think I've done my job when people on both sides are mad at me, you know, to be honest.
Isn't that the truth?
But I think that it's my view is that we don't think one political party has all the answers. We don't think one political party has people who care more about our country. We don't think one political party is entitled to more of the benefit of the doubt. We want to hold both sides. We want to tell the truth about both sides so that voters can hold them accountable.
So, final question. I just lied to you. I said it was final question, but now it's a final
final question.
the follow-up final question. Have you're long experienced in the world of journalism. Have you ever seen our nation, or our state, to that matter, as divided as what we are today?
No, never. I mean, I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I think that we've been steadily becoming more divided. There are notable times when the country has come together, but those times are brief and getting to be fairly few and far between. So, and I think that's a tragedy. I think that we as a country, one of the problems I see in my business is our inability to really sort out fact from fiction at this stage, or fact from opinion, and our willingness to just flat out deny facts that don't fit with our worldview. And I think that's very, very dangerous.
It is dangerous long term, for sure. And we've seen other nations in other times go through this exact same scenario. And
yeah,
it has been devastating.
It makes it very, very easy for the people in power to hoodwink the American public.
Absolutely. Her name is Kathy Obradovich, ladies and gentlemen, editor-in-chief of something relatively new here in Iowa. It is Iowa Capital Dispatch, part of an entire network of states, now 15, and probably by the time this airs, there may be 16 that are out there reporting on state house policy issues in their respective states. Kathy, thank you so much for visiting with me. This is a little bit longer than what we generally do, but I think this is so valuable for people to understand.
Thanks for having me, Michael, and I hope everyone will check us out on iowacapitaldispatch.com.
And we will have links to that up on the radio blog. Thanks again. Once again, that was journalist Kathy Obradovich from the Iowa Capital Dispatch. We will have links to that up on our radio blog. Well, that about wraps it up for another broadcast day. Thanks so very much for being with us. For all of us associated with the Business News Hour, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator. Aaron Libby is in charge of sales and marketing. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. For all those folks and for Kathy Obradovich, my name's Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful day. Be safe, be well, be careful, most of all. Be good to your fellow man. Good day.